We seem to be missing our first presenter, so we're going to jump right in and move the order around a little bit. So Simon, who's from the University of Derby, is going to speak first, and then I'll go second. And I think what we'll try and do is we might have a little bit of time for questions in between, and we can also have a larger discussion as we get to the end as well of the session. So I'll leave it to Simon.
Thank you. Thanks for coming. It's really encouraging to see such a large audience of interested people in e-learning. One thing that we're going to look at today is the Second Life. How many of you here have heard of Second Life? Okay, so that's the vast majority of you. These days, if you ask people under the age of 20, they'll all put their hand up. Second Life's incredibly popular. But it's not just used for teaching, learning, support. It is also used as a game as well. But we need to be very clear about making the distinction between virtual worlds as games and virtual worlds for a specific use. In this context, we're looking at teaching and learning, and at this conference, we're looking about the facility of virtual worlds in helping people with mental health problems. But the capacity to use the platform, the tool, is much, much greater than that. It really is a palette which we can draw from so many different things. So the title is Teaching and Learning in Online Virtual Worlds, but it extends much, much further than that. I'm going to try and make this talk very specific. So if you've considered using a virtual world, and there are more than just Second Life, although I'm going to talk about that predominantly, then you may be interested in some of the projects we've done at the University of Derby. If you have any questions along the way that can't wait, please chip in and I'll try to clarify. I believe we're going to have questions at the end, right at the end? Yeah. So I have no conflict of interest to declare. I'm a developmental psychologist. I'm interested in how we can use virtual worlds for an educational purpose, for a research purpose, and also to support people with additional requirements, people with particular additional needs. I want to acknowledge some of my collaborators and the team at the University of Derby. Now, you'll notice up there, they're looking a bit odd, aren't they? Some of them look a little bit ill. Okay. And this one here, he looks a bit aggressive, wouldn't you agree? Trust me, they don't look like that in real life. Certainly, John Sear here is not this person here. But this introduces you to the concept of an avatar. An avatar is an online persona, a character that one adopts to represent yourself in a 3D multi-user virtual world. The one I'm going to talk about, Second Life, is really, really popular. There's over 5 million registered accounts. And at any one time, right now, there's about 50,000 people online. They're walking around, they're going to concerts, they're talking to one another, they're buying virtual clothes, they're going to virtual lectures. They're doing the sort of stuff you and I do in the real world. And there's a real parallel with the real world. So we talk of the virtual world and the real world. And the difference between them is what we're interested in. My avatar is called Milton Broom, and I adapt him for use in an educational context. And you're going to hear about some of the projects we've done at University of Derby. Over the last 10 years, I think it's fair to say virtual worlds have really taken off. In 2003, a company called Linden Lab created Second Life. Since then, we've seen use absolutely explode. The growth is exponential. All of the major universities in the world have a Second Life presence. A lot of them have built virtual campuses. Virtual teaching and learning goes on in the virtual world. But it's much more than that. It's much more than just teaching and learning. Independently, groups of people who have shared additional requirements, shared interests, have banded together to make groups independent of any real-world organization. They've come together, they've put a structure in place, and they share information. And these people are supporting one another in the virtual world. So these pictures up here give you some idea of some of the educational applications. We can set up virtual lectures like this. We can put very, very customized environments together to meet our specific needs. So if I want to do a lecture on autism, for instance, I can upload some PowerPoint slides, I can put them onto a presenter, my avatar can stand here, and I can talk to my students when they come into the virtual world. Now, they can be anywhere in the world. They could be in Jamaica, Australia, California, anywhere. And I can talk to them in real-time voice, or I can use text as well. And I can also stream in video. So I can do a real-life lecture, and they can stream it onto the web through something like this setup. And the people in Second Life, the avatars, can view it there. But they can do it when they're all sat around a coffee table or in their virtual houses. They can have a meeting independent of that. They can go off and do a discussion group. So our students can come in, and however they choose to organize themselves, they can meet in the virtual world. So we can do this sort of thing in a virtual learning environment, something like Blackboard or WebCT, something like this. But we can't do it with the same amount of immediacy. This is a 3D world. So these avatars can move around. They can stick their hand up and ask questions. They can raise particular issues. They can walk out and go to another lecture if they want to. All of the stuff we can do in this room, you can do in the virtual world. So for those of you not familiar with virtual worlds, you know, week upon week they're getting better and better. The graphics are coming on in leaps and bounds. What you really need is a broadband connection and a suitable computer to allow you to get into the virtual world. To get into Second Life, it's free. So the costs of starting off a project are virtually minimal. All you need is your avatar and a piece of virtual land. I want to talk to you about one project that we did. Really, I'm talking about the early days research as a way to convince you that working in this way is exciting, it's very different, it's effective, and if you haven't already, I'd encourage you to go into the virtual world and try it for yourself. Later on in the day, there's another talk where I actually show it to you so you have a better understanding of what it is, because I'll be playing some video, hopefully. But here, what I want you to concentrate on is how you can utilize this and how your clients and users or students might benefit from this, because if there's no real world benefit, why are we doing it? So think of it not as a game, but as a platform for delivering services, information, different ways of working. This project was interesting because it was our first venture into the virtual world. What we were trying to do was just explore the territory, find out what we can do, what we can't do, what works, what doesn't work. So this was blended learning, you know, and in an extreme form. All of the stuff we presented to our undergraduate students of psychology was available in the real world in 2D websites, in their books, in the virtual learning environments. And we used the supplementary information in the virtual world to pad out their knowledge. We tried to assess what the value and validity of this environment was. So blended learning revisited, an exploration of experiential learning in 3D virtual environments. I'm going to talk about the project, the design, the preparation, planning, development of the virtual teaching space, but most importantly, the lessons that we learnt. So this is Milton Broom. He's my avatar. I'm very bonded with him. In my developmental psychology lectures, I teach my undergraduates about Bowlby's theory of attachment, of course. And I'm not sure what's going on here, but when something happens to Milton, it happens to me. But be aware that people do form emotional or effectual bonds to their avatars. And it's that bond, that immediacy with the virtual world, that is what we're interested in. We're trying to tap in to that connection. For a lot of people, they'll never make it. This is on a computer screen. This is a game. It's stupid. Not going there. Don't want to know. That's fine. That's fine. But these are always the people that haven't tried it. Okay. When you try it, you go, wow, why aren't I working like this? I never knew about this. Thank you. But from that point, that aha moment, to actually running, teaching, learning, support, or research in the virtual world, that's a long, long transition and a whole world of pain that you have to go through. Because it isn't easy. I think it's effective, but it isn't easy. We evaluated the use of Second Life for teaching and learning in a UK university. So, as I've mentioned, we took a group of psychology undergraduates into the virtual world and offered them a supplementary training. So the challenge for us was to give added benefit to what they were already accessing. Our rationale was as follows here. So, they're already getting a lot of e-learning materials. A lot of our students at the University of Derby are familiar with virtual learning environments, but most of this stuff is either streamed real-life lectures or text. Occasionally, you might get a quiz online, something like that. You know, more innovative universities, establishments have put more interactive content into their web pages. But really, these virtual learning environments, in terms of the web-based ones, are pretty much 2D, static, and let's face it, quite boring. What we can do in the virtual world is make this stuff exciting and give them high levels of social interaction. So the way they move around in the real world can be the way they learn in the virtual world. So they can provide this highly immersive, socially interactive way of enhancing university teaching. But we also can go much further than that. We can look at supporting people with vulnerabilities in the virtual world. And we can look at doing real research. The problem is, as I mentioned, student attitudes, not just students, vary. When we blend these methods, there are two types of person. Those who go, cool, let's try it. And they're in there and off and away. And that's often how children learn. Children learn by trying things out and failing. They learn by playing. Observation as well. Ah, that person's doing this, I'll try it now. Does it work? So although there are many ways of learning, one of the challenges is to get over that initial boundary. So it does require almost a leap of faith to go into the virtual world and leave all of this wonderful stuff behind. So these are our teaching labs at the university. We're quite blessed with really, really high spec computing technology at the university because we also train students to go on into the games industry. So we already have our firewall ports open, we already have our high spec computers, we already have dual screen monitors at each of the desks. Our facilities are really, really good. So we were somewhat at an advantage for going into the virtual world because all of this stuff is very, very valuable when you're making that leap. What we're using here is a laptop, a mouse, broadband internet connection. I could get onto Second Life quite easily, but there are barriers to entry. What we were trying to do is take all of this stuff, you know, regular seminars and teaching, and convert it into something with meaning in the virtual world. Our aims for this specific project were to develop methods of teaching psychology, just entry-level psychology, but the study skills that are important to those level of students. So things like writing an essay, giving a presentation, being able to structure a lab report. We wanted to improve the quality of their learning, if at all possible. And we had to develop out innovative teaching methods. And we were keen to try stuff that just couldn't be tried in the real world. So we wanted to go beyond traditional methods. We also were really, really aware that we needed to raise our level of staff expertise in this area. We're quite a big university, and we've clustered into special interest groups. One of those groups wanted to look at virtual worlds teaching and learning and research as well. So like-minded individuals came together, and we shared our experience, and this is this project here. So we did this with a blend of in-world enhanced material. And when I talk of in-world, I mean in Second Life. And we gave that alongside, so this really is blended learning, alongside traditional e-learning materials. So what we wanted was a shift away from this isolated study, especially away from tutor-led instruction, to make it more student-led. Because in the virtual world, you really can put in place stuff that you couldn't in the real world. You can do asynchronous learning. You can set up a world, or go in when they've gone off at home, going at 4 o'clock in the morning. People on any time zone can go in there. They can entertain materials that you can put on streaming media. They can do different types of educational game. One of the things we were interested in was setting up something we could step away from as teachers and facilitators and see what happened. See if we could set it up and would it run without problem there. So the students were overall responsible for the final teaching methods that we used. So this was very much a process of learning between the students and the staff as well. Well, in the early days, we didn't know anything about Second Life. We knew it had huge potential, and we had seen some of the ways that it had been used in education, teaching and research, but no one really, at this stage, was utilising it to its full effect. So we started with just an island. An island is a piece of virtual land that is just barren.
My main question is to look at the previous slide for just a second.
Sure.
Okay, the last portion of there, where the students were overall responsible. Just to give a bit of I'm from Brandon University in Manitoba, three provinces over. Just teaching at the Get Nursing Program, and I use the lens approach. My question to you is, when you have students who actually assume the responsibility, how did that work? My experience is actually, because I'm actually the risk taker, I'm faculty, I'm being lynched currently. Students are livid with me because I'm the teacher and I should be teaching them. And so what are your experiences and what have you had? Have you had any of that experience? Because you're currently in that situation.
Yeah. We weren't taking that away from them. They got that as well. They got their regular lectures. They got their regular 2D web material. They got their seminars. So this was in addition. It's supplementary. The real issue was in thinking about faculty differently from student. The student-faculty divide. And all of a sudden, their facilitator, their teacher, their lecturer becomes an avatar. You know, how do they interact with this thing on their computer screen? So when I say that the overall methods used were heavily influenced by them, what we did was take their needs into account to see how they used the environment and sculpt it to that. And it can go horribly wrong, and a lot of them don't like it. But I think, as I'll go on to speak about, it really requires an element of trust. And it's making that leap and trusting the students and saying, well, guys, you know, what do you want to get from this session? Well, we want to learn about the course outcomes. We want to prepare for the exam. We want to know how to write an essay or to form an academic argument, give a presentation, whatever it might be. We want to learn about Bowlby's theory or Freud or something. Well, okay, then what we'll do, we'll set up an environment where you can best do that. And if you don't like it, tell us, and we'll be responsive to it. Because whereas it might take a whole semester to change that, we could change it in half an hour in Second Life. We've got the skills to be able to swap things around, import materials, or change the layout of a room, change the structure, and we can do it there and then on the spot. So we were very responsive to their needs. There are ethical issues about how far you take that as well. And as a facilitator, one does have to control that to a certain extent. So you are there and you have a responsibility to one's students. You must bear that in mind at all times. But yeah, we try to use a dynamic and responsive, reflexive approach in a kind of an action-orientated or that kind of methodology. So we started with nothing and we built up from there. Right? We had no expectations of what's going to happen. We wanted to learn, basically. Right? Do we replicate a campus? Do we try and innovate? What do? We knew we could simulate. We can build a lovely campus. We could spend £10,000 in hiring consultants and builders and scripters, people that program in the virtual world. What's the use of that? What's the use of putting up a virtual campus? They can get to the real one. Maybe it's good for our e-learners. We're all over the world. Maybe they get a feel more for an academic lecture. So there is an advantage to it. But we're trying to go beyond that, because this is a bold new world. This is kind of the thing we ended up with. There's a lot of stuff going on there. this is my avatar down here, and he can walk around. There are various different teaching bits and pieces here. There are virtual terminals here. They can jump out to the web. There's all kinds of smart, intelligently scripted stuff in there. You get a feel for the virtual world. You get a feel for what it might be to walk around and learn in this environment. But for those people with mental health problems, you can see how making a customized environment like this, which they can call their own, which they can have a piece of the action on in designing, can lead them to feeling ownership for a project. It's a space that they can own. For our undergraduates, this became home. So we tried to plan it out. We went through the stages of acquiring funding, learning about how to build in the virtual world. And we decided that aesthetics aren't really that important. It was function, what the stuff does that was the important thing. It's got to work. I mean, that looks pretty, right? But it could look ugly and do the same thing. We weren't really concerned at the end of the day in making it pretty, although Second Life can be very, very pretty. And there was our compulsion to try and impose our personalities. I like this art. All right, let's put that in there on the wall. Absolute rubbish, waste of time. So we were interested in making the sound pretty good. We weren't interested in marketing value. But our marketing people at the university, of course, were and did want to do that spin on it. So to a certain extent, we had to accommodate. So we had good intentions. And this was something like the sort of schedule looked like to begin with. All of this just went out the window when we actually started teaching in Second Life. I mean, the reality was much, much different. Everything broke down and it went horribly wrong. Everything that could go wrong went wrong. The technology failed. The students didn't show up. The students didn't want to do it. They wanted to do it like this. So all of your fears of doing it like this happened, and we learned from it. Bit by bit, we resolved these problems. Although we had good intentions, the reality was different. In-world communication soon broke down. So they're wearing headsets with voice or typing text. Right? And we lost control. And students were running around with their avatars, making themselves into gnomes and toads and flying dragons and things. All of this stuff is possible in the virtual world. Not really conducive to good teaching. Okay? Because if you're someone like Milton in a virtual lecture theatre trying to give a lecture to a dragon, to a gnome, to a toad, to a giant, right, and to a thing called a furry, which is kind of an anthropomorphized human with ears and more fluffy, and they're asking serious academic questions, it's like, yeah, all right, okay. Okay, so the rabbit second along on the left, I mean, how do you kind of teach in this place? In this environment, all of these things happened, and tried to kind of resolve them. We went in, we built in too big, too fast, but we learned from our mistakes. Right? And the best way to do this is by doing it, not by talking about it, not by showing your slides. Get into Second Life and try it out. We ran pilots, we revised them. And then all of a sudden, we had a breakthrough. We had busy learning environments like that. And we said, we don't need all this stuff around us. Why can't we strip it all back to the essentials? What are the essential requirements of effective learning? What actually do we need here? Well, the answer was there all along. We called our project SLABS, Second Life Labs, SLABS. Just a slab of open land like this. What do we need to teach? Nothing. An avatar. Whatever we need, we'll bring in, because you can do that in a virtual world. You don't need all that stuff. Just the bare minimum. It's like a new wave art of education. It's kind of like a minimum learning space. This is like 300 virtual meters up in the air. You can teleport in. You can have 50 students there. I'll give you an example. This is a spidergram planner. What we were interested in is representing conceptual space. There's a structural representation of a psychology lab report. Introduction, method section, discussion, procedure, references, apparatus. All of this stuff, you click on it, you'll get a video streamed into Second Life, or a text card. It'll allow you to jump out to the web, you'll be able to access PDF files. Our students can come in and move this around, play around with the structure of an academic essay or a lab report. They can walk around this, so they can conceptualize it in a 3D space. And that's a lot different from looking at it in 2D, yeah, because it's inside here, it's happening in here, they're representing it, and they can understand it in a different way. That's what we're trying to tap into. You can utilize these spaces in the conventional way, doing what Milton is doing there with your PowerPoint presentation, and doing what I'm trying to do here, or you can actually go beyond that and try to innovate. That's what we're trying to do. Yeah, this is a mini elephant avatar on my students. This is an office that we've got. You can click on the 20 top psychologists of the last century, before him. Freud, for instance, you click on him, he gives you a note card about his theories. Yeah. You can access, at will, different lecture slides that they've received in the real world. You can get PDF files from the virtual library. This is a resource. This is a really powerful resource. They can access this whenever they want. Asynchronously, they can go in, they can have their own meetings, and do small group work. This is a really, really powerful space in which to teach and learn. And the students love it. When they get it. When they get it. And you have to try it to get it. So we learned some important lessons. Traditional teaching isn't appropriate in the virtual world. You can do it. But, you know, it's going to be quite boring. Why don't you just film it? You just play them, give them a file on the web. We're looking for the advantage there. Sometimes that traditional teaching falls apart. Be very careful about knowing what can go wrong and how to protect your students in that customized environment that you can completely customize and control. You can lock out people coming into that. You have certain qualities to it. You can put anything in there. You can innovate in the virtual world. So no man is an island, and we shouldn't impose our personality as teachers and educators onto that space. When it evolves through function, when they have a say in the design of it, that's when it becomes dynamic and exciting. It's a great place to collaborate. These virtual worlds have a really enduring quality to them. There's a novelty value which you just can't get from 2D or static web pages. You can move around. That person I'm talking to in the virtual world, I can walk around and I can see them, I can talk to them, have a conversation. We can exchange animated, non-verbal communication. And as we proceed, into this technology and watch its evolution, this is just going to get better and better. I would suggest we're going to see more and more of this. It's not going to go away. It's going to get better and better. And the ease of transition into it is going to be facilitated by educators coming in and trying it out and making gadgets and tools. And that transition, although now it's quite hard to do effective teaching in the virtual world, it's going to get easier and easier. Although most students are hesitant, by good inductions we can make that easier for them. So we can make that transition into the virtual world a lot easier. So problem-based activities are the way to go, not traditional teaching. Getting them to do stuff, to solve quizzes and problems and puzzles, for them to be active in the learning itself, to try out different things. So learning by doing, not by passively receiving. When they're engaged in that process of learning, and when educators facilitate that and make sure it's appropriate, that's when it's really effective. So they can be complex to get into. And they do require a lot of multitasking. If I were giving this lecture simultaneously in the real world and in Second Life, I would be wearing a headset. I would also be queuing up on my computer some text so that in Second Life they could get the text of this lecture at the same time. It is quite tricky to do, but when it's done well, it really, really can enhance that learning experience. And you lose the traditional boundaries. E-learning is transformed. That's what we're aiming for. So we learned some important lessons. Now, the least of which was like form follows function. We wanted this stuff to work, and it took us a long, long time to make it work. And we haven't got it cracked yet, but we're on our way, and many, many other universities are. So I'd suggest to you, if you are in a position to try this out, go into Second Life, go into a virtual world, and see what it's all about. So it works really, really well in the right context. It doesn't work so well the type of student that wouldn't traditionally engage with it, they require more of a transitional period into it. It does work well with students that are more comfortable with the controls of Second Life. And those who see themselves as sort of net generation or Web 2.0 sort of accommodators, the Twitterers, texters. It doesn't necessarily mean the younger students. It does require that leap of faith to make that transition. But importantly, the staff themselves, they've got to see themselves as partners in this process. They've got to be open enough to fail. They've got to say, right, that didn't work. It doesn't matter. Let's see how we can make it work. Because if you go into Second Life and you try teaching your students, especially if you're doing big group work, then it gets really messy. And you do have to put some structure on that. We don't necessarily need to control them. We have to have the confidence that the students will find the material interesting and engage with it. So we're trying to bring it back to the content. That's what we're aiming for. It's the content, always the content that matters, not the techniques, the tools, the technology, none of that matters. It has to be solved, we have to get that right. It's the content we're always going for, get our students to engage with it. So some staff don't see this as an ideal way of teaching. There are a lot of, if I can use the word, traditionalists that are resistant to it. And that's fine, because it takes lots of different styles of teaching within a university. And we must cater for all different needs, of course. But I would suggest that when we use it, and we use it well, it does become an effective teaching tool. So in summary, virtual worlds can provide an opportunity for collaboration and interactivity, support and community, and also, for me, really interesting is the potential of them for research and scholarship. So using this to do real research. There is a lack of evidence base for this stuff at the moment. There are journals springing up supporting publication and outputs from this. At the moment, we're not seeing a replicated evidence base. So when we talk of evidence-based learning, we've got to cut this some slack and just see how we can utilize it. Let's try it. If it works, it works. If it doesn't work for your learners, don't use it. But I'd suggest you might want to give it a go. It does require a lot of planning, it does require a team, it does require a lot of techies on board as well. You need your IT technicians to be there behind you and supporting you. It takes lots of time. But to ensure it has real world value for the users, it's got to be done, I think, within a multitask team. One has to put in the hours. If you're a 9-to-5er, right, this isn't for you. If you're prepared to work at 5 in the morning on a task for your students the next day because something's not working, then this is definitely for you. This takes a lot of time and effort, but when it's set up, oh, is it good. Really, trust me, it really works well. It's impressive. The students love it. Thank you for your time and attention.
We have time for questions as we switch things over, so if I might hand it over to someone.
So from what you said, one of the main points is that it works well for interactive, for a really more interactive type of learning rather than more interactive, role-playing, can you say what's
going on? Exactly, yeah. Where you can introduce a personal element to it. Because in a virtual world you have avatars and everything is around those avatars. Where a person walks, that's their field of view. If they're interacting with different people in that world, well, the special quality is between them. It's the difference between what he knows and what I know. What does this person know that I don't know? Is that, that's where the space is that we're trying to accommodate. So stuff like role plays, yeah, absolutely ideal.
How would you see its application in informal learning environments, not where there's it's learner directed accessing information on mental health or any kind of health related services, the interaction between say blood pressure and depression or something like that? What would be the, how do you see that moving forward. I don't want to see the restriction, but I want to know it would be possible.
It's been done already. Going to Second Life. Yeah. All of that's being done right now. Yeah, really cool. Right now, people are going and accessing information, having virtual therapy in Second Life. People are coming together in support groups. Everything, if you can think of it, it's probably being done. Any other questions at all? I will speak to you later on in the day at the museum. So I'll leave it there. Thank you.
We have some more questions. We have some more opportunities for questions at the very very end as well, because we should be able to finish a bit earlier. So.